stories that we like to tell. It's like when getting up early in the morning with our dad, we used to go out and meet up with our uncles and work in the fields.
He was always into the winemaking side, but just did homemade stuff. But everyone loved it.
As members of the family, presenting the wines ourselves, it's very important for us. And I think it's important for people as well to put a face on the wine.
I was born and raised here. I love the family history. I love the seasons. So somewhere deep down, I knew I was coming back.
It evolved. It started with wanting to grow grapes.
We say, so drink the wine. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 380. This week we feature Allison Stelzner of Heron House, Yountville, Napa Valley. Small producer tasting room experiences vary all over Napa Valley, but when you have the opportunity to taste from a few select cellars in one spot, that is an exceptional experience. Allison Stelzner is the creative director of Heron House, located in Yountville. Heron House represents wines from 8 small producers in Napa in a comfortable atmosphere just off Washington Street in one of wine country's most desired locations. Heron House offerings also include Allison's family wine from Stelzner Vineyard. A few weeks ago, I had the chance to chat with Allison and experience the uncommon in Napa Valley tasting experiences. You can also hear Allison on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the term orography. I'm in Yountville, and I'm here with Allison Stelzner at the Heron House tasting room. And Allison is the, I'm going to let you describe your position to us.
I have to call myself creative director, curator here at Heron House. So this was kind of a project that our family undertook. And we really want to curate your wine tasting experience here in Yountville, not only through a really beautiful collective of 8 small family wineries, but also goods and textiles, arts that really represent what we do best here in Napa, which is be creative and make things with our hands.
Very much. And when you say 8 average cases, we'll walk through these, but
yeah, generally somewhere, some of our brands are under 500 cases. Most are under 1,000. And so again, all very small family owned and operated properties.
Even better. Family owned is great. A small output is something that our listeners love to seek out. So this is cool.
Yeah. I think we always like to talk about scale when we talk about the wines that we kind of have really hand selected here. Mm-hmm. And there is something different when you make wine at a small scale. You know every barrel. You can get your arms around it. And you're just in tune. It's very intentionally done. And we think that you can taste it in the glass.
Yeah, I would agree. Now, I mentioned your name. Stelzner is probably very well known to our listeners because Stelzner is a very well-known brand, and you are part of that family. You are, I guess, second generation?
I'm second generation. So my dad, Dick Stelzner, started here in Napa actually as an artist. He was a potter. He blew glass and threw pottery, had a studio on Lodi Lane, and then kind of got into vineyard work and vineyard management and vineyard development, and that led him in 1964 to purchase 30 acres in Stag's Leap. It was an old dilapidated prune ranch. I always like to try to kind of lay the land at that time. There were not grapes here. It was prunes and apples and walnuts and cows. And I think they argued over $25 an acre for about a year. So times have changed just a little. But he was really fortunate to find this amazing benchland property in Stag's Leap right at the base of the Palisades. And he went on to purchase more property in Stag's Leap from there. Started making wine in 1977, and that's after being a very successful grape grower from the early late 60s to mid-70s. And then we grew into a 20,000 case brand. We took a step back from that in 2012. We sold part of our holdings in Stag's Leap and just took a step back and kind of decided what we wanted to be in generation 2.0, let's say. So we're down to 1,000 cases just under in production. Between 2 brands, Stelzner Vineyards, which is my family's brand. We make Cabernet, Malbec, and Sangiovese off our estate in Stag's Leap. And Bench Vineyards, which is my interpretation of Stag's Leap, my love letter to Stag's Leap. Being born and raised in the property, you know, you just know that land in a different way, walking the vineyards, you know, as a young child, moving on.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that the same area where Odette is now?
So that's where Odette is today is our former property. But we retained 30 acres in Stag's Leap, actually at the very base of the Palisades. Oh. So we think it's great. Odette has done a great job of taking that property kind of to the next level. And we've kind of decided to focus on our remaining 30 acres. We were fortunate to bring Jim Barber in to do our farming in 2014, along with Mike Smith to head our winemaking program. So really, you know, talented, dedicated individuals who want to see our family succeed in this valley and have been really amazing partners to work with.
Well, they've certainly done a great job in the past. It was interesting to see when it was there no longer for the period of time I've been coming out mm-hmm. here. So this fills in a lot of gaps for me. It's nice to know that you guys are still making wine. That's great.
Yes. But I think we had to kind of come back and decide what scale we want to make wine at. I think in 2010, 11, when we kind of started this idea of letting go of that property, my dad was 75. Mm-hmm. And we weren't big enough to be big. 25,000 cases wasn't big enough to scale the right way for mass distribution. And as we saw consolidation with distribution, that became more and more challenging. But we weren't small enough to be small. And so we kind of had to say, what do we want to be for the next generation? And I think it's been really gratifying to do that soul searching together while my dad is still alive.
Yeah.
And able to really enjoy seeing this kind of rebirth of the brand and the success that we're having, and kind of also just back to the basics in certain ways, making really small lot Cabernets, which is what he started doing in 1977. So it's been a really amazing experience, and he's really really grateful for the opportunity to kind of still be doing this, but at a scale that feels right for where we are right now.
Yeah, that's nice. And again, I was a fan, so it's nice to know that's still out there.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Heron House. And this is in Yountville, a very well-known tourist area. And pretty much there are plenty of tasting rooms around here. So, but what you're doing is different because you have different brands.
So, exactly. So for the Stelzner and Bench, we wanted a place where we could bring the wines in front of the public. And we wanted to create a space that reflected what we think Napa is all about. And for me, wine, Napa, my whole life, you know, what customers and what our guests come back and tell me is they want to know what my favorite wines are. And they really want to know the stories. They want to tell you the stories of how they found your wine and how it made a positive impact in their life or an experience. An anniversary, a wedding, a graduation, a special dinner. Maybe they met my dad or myself at a wine dinner, let's say in Milwaukee, right? We've done many. And so for us, this was a space that we could create to connect with those people. And for me, the storytelling is the most important part of the wine. We can talk, you know, at length technically about wine. Sure. But for me, it's really what brought the person or persons or the family to go through this process, because it's a pretty intensive process making wine and very intentional. And so as I kind of come up with the idea of wanting to create a space for Stelzner and for Bench to connect with people, a lot of my fellow winemaking friends wanted a similar thing. But the hurdles to get to that, to open a public tasting space, are high.
How long did it take you?
For us, it was about a year-long process, and I actually find that incredibly short in the big picture of things.
Around here, that sure is.
I've been living in Yountville since I moved back from college. I love Yountville. I've watched Yountville kind of evolve and grow, and obviously food is what has led the evolution of Yountville. And so the timing, the place felt right, the proximity to Stag's Leap, Yountville felt right for us. The intimacy of the space, we're really small. We decided to kind of break the space up and make it two small private tasting spaces that kind of invoke like you're sitting at my dinner table. And those, to me, that's the best moments to connect with people about wine and tell them, like, this is where my life led us. This is where this life led my family and our story here. And then connect them with other brands that have very similar stories.
Nice. So what do you say we walk through the wines?
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me about each one. Start at the beginning.
So we'll go alphabetically. That feels very diplomatic and good. Bench Vineyards, which is a project I started in 2014 with my husband. We have a Bordeaux blend, which is Cabernet, Malbec, and Petit Verdot. And we actually, it's only like 50% Cabernet. So The Malbec and Petit Verdot are 25% each. And the wine is absolutely delicious. And doesn't taste like Cabernet, but really we think highlights the beauty of the fruit grown on our estate in Stag's Leap. We also make a Cabernet. Next in the lineup, Eponymous would be our next brand. Eponymous is by a winemaker named Bob Pepe. Bob's family's been here making wine, which would be their old winery. Pepe was what Cardinal is today.
Oh, really?
Yep, he's been making wine here in the Valley since the 80s. Actually makes wine in two continents. He makes wine in Argentina also. Very accomplished winemaker. Very, very good friend of ours. Makes a really mean cioppino, which is like the classic Italian fisherman's stew.
Cool.
But also makes a gorgeous Pinot out of Anderson Valley, a white blend out of Carnero, so it's dry. And the label he has is called Eponymous, which is... for one who cannot use one's own name, because when they sold the winery, they sold the brand Pepe also.
It's too bad that happens so often.
So again, for us, it's such a pleasure. He works with us on our two projects, Bench and Stelzner. He's a co-winemaker with Mike Smith, and we just love representing his story and his history here in the Valley, and thinks he makes amazing wines, especially if they're kind of price-quality ratio. Really unbelievable.
And about how many cases is he doing?
I think he's just under 500.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah. So let's see. The next would be Hobel, and that's Bahani and Cameron Hobel. And they came to Napa, I think Cameron came here in 1989 with part of winebid.com. Very young, was very accomplished as an auctioneer for Christie's Wine Auction House. Mm. Loved wine. Married the very talented Bahani, who is now in law, wine law at DPF, a local law firm here. And at the time, they befriended Thomas Rivers Brown, who was an assistant winemaker at Turley at the time. And he and Cameron really became friends because they both loved wine. And so fast forward 10 years, and it was time for Cameron and Bahani. They wanted to do a project. And their friend Thomas was the only person they thought they'd want to do the project. And so they do three single vineyard Cabernets.
Nice.
So again, unbelievably small quantities, under 500 cases total between all three wines. And I think very intentionally made, and I think especially a lot of times when you have winemaker and owner relationships, the owner has to drive what they want the result to be. And sometimes there can be a disconnect between that. And so I think Cameron and Bahani's love of wine, they have a very clear vision. And Thomas helps them get there. But they know where they want to go with that wine and what style. They have warmer sites, two sites in St. Helena and one in Calistoga. And so they're just gorgeous wines to work with, for sure. And I think they get a lot out of Thomas in terms of the focus. It's really a beautiful, and again, a kind of a cool story if you meet in your 30s and then you get to make wine in your 40s and 50s together.
Yeah.
The next brand would be Lindstrom, which actually are neighbors in Stag's Leap. They have a small 5-acre vineyard on the hill right above our old property. So right on the top of the hill. It's actually very interesting. It's not a hillside. It's on the top of a hill.
So there's a flat space kind
of. Almost like a kind of curved, semi-flat. Five separate little blocks, just under 5 acres. Mike Wolf does the farming on that, and Celia Welch makes the wines.
Oh, nice.
Which is a really cool project. So they do Cabernet off their estate there. And then they also make a Pinot Noir from Dutton Ranch in Russian River.
Oh, it's not bad.
And it's Celia's only Pinot.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Which is super cool.
Yeah, it is.
So we feel, again, for us, we were very intentional with the winemakers and the families we wanted to represent, because I feel that these people are making the most compelling wines right now.
Yeah.
And we feel very honored and proud and grateful that we can kind of be here and share those stories and put our point of view and give a perspective to you. So when you come here, you can kind of go, oh, I can touch lots of different parts of the Valley, and I can understand the history and the scope and kind of how they all fit together.
Yeah, sure.
Because that makes it, I think, a more interesting experience overall. Because ultimately, learning that context helps you understand everything else around you. Let's see. The next would be Myriad. And Myriad is Mike Smith, his personal project. Mike Smith is also the winemaker on Bench and Stelzner. Mike is self-taught. And Mike is very interesting. He loves wine, was kind of more of a collector of wine, always very active on the wine kind of blog boards at their kind of earliest formation. And Mike moved to Napa, slept on Thomas River Brown's couch, and said, let me learn how to make wine for free. And so this is what I'm talking about, that kind of level of intention, that passion. I mean, I don't know how much more passionate you can get than I'll sleep on your couch and work for free.
Yeah, right.
To learn the craft. And I think because intellectually, wine is really, it's a little bit of a crazy mind game sometimes. You have to, all these inputs, whether it's the growing season, the day you pick, the barrels you use, all those different ways you touch it during that process. And it's a long process.
It's very long.
18 months, 24 months. Like, that's an incredibly, plus let's say the growing season, that's an incredibly long process.
Right.
To finally get it on the table, and then you have to evaluate it, and you kind of have to look back on yourself and say, how did I do?
It's like waiting for a very long picture to develop in the days of developing.
Exactly. So Mike went on with Thomas to be the assistant winemaker at Schrader. And then Mike took over the winemaking at Carter Cellars in 2010. And since he took kind of over the reins of winemaking with Mark Carter at Carter Cellars, the wines have just, you know, shot to kind of just a really beautiful kind of respect and great status. And then Mike started his own personal brand called Myriad. And so Mike actually makes a single vineyard, Stelzner Vineyard wine from our vineyard under his Myriad label.
Oh, nice.
And so he does some really other cool small single vineyard things, Kennefic Ranch, Round Pond. He does quite a few of the Beckstoffer, George III, the Las Posadas. So he does the really amazing wines. And I would just say, working with him, the humbleness and kind of he's very grounded. And that approach is very similar to kind of what I think you kind of have to take when you're doing. It's like slow and steady. And thoughtful, and that's been really a joy to kind of, learned a lot from him, and he helps drive that process. And it was great because he'd never worked with Jim Barber and his crew. And so that's been really great to bring both of those kind of very talented entities together. Mm-hmm. And we come pretty collaboratively as a group together. And, you know, we taste a lot of wines, and we're fortunate from our property. We keep 20% of the fruit for ourselves, and we sell 80%. And we've got a lot of great winemakers in there making wine, single vineyard wines from our property in Stelzner Vineyards. Mm-hmm. And so it's been great to kind of have everyone be on the property and want to elevate it and make really amazing wines from it. It's been an honor. So moving on from there, I'm just looking alphabetically here. We have the Stelzner Vineyards wines, which is, you know, a label that my dad started in 1977 because he couldn't sell all his grapes. It has kind of been many different sizes, but now we're just under 500 cases. I call it a unicorn wine. One of the only Sangiovese's, pure Sangiovese's left in Stag's Leap District. I think Silverado Vineyards might still do one.
I actually think they do, yes.
Yes.
But there's still not a lot of it anywhere in Napa at all.
And we have 0.88 acres, so just under an acre. We make 100 cases. It's absolutely delicious.
Nice.
And I think that's something we'll always do.
Good. Good.
You know, because I think you got to have something a little bit different. And then we make a beautiful Cabernet also. And then we have Switchback Ridge, which is a fascinating story. That's the Peterson family. They have been, if you know the Three Palms Vineyard,
I do.
On your way up towards Calistoga on the east side of the valley, that is, if you look directly east, that's the entrance to Dutch Henry Canyon.
Sure.
And right at the base there's 23 acres. That's been in the Peterson family for over 105 years.
Oh my gosh.
Actually farmed as walnuts, prunes, chickens, as they like to say, some horses. And there are 3 acres there from, I want to say they're probably 65-year-old head-trained Petite Syrah vines. So they make Petite Syrah from their old vines, Petite Syrah, Merlot, and then Cabernet Sauvignon. And the brand Switchback Ridge was started by Kelly Peterson, who's fifth generation, in 1999. Bob Foley was their winemaker. And Kelly's son has just come on board and started actually making wine with Mike Smith. And so they've just moved the production over to kind of the next generation under Mike's guidance.
That's very nice.
Which is really cool. And again, you know, I love this kind this community. We're part of a community. All these brands, we are friends, we know each other, and we all want to kind of see all of this keep going forward. And so that's why you work together and try to lift each other up. And then last but not least is Zeitgeist Sellers, which Zeitgeist is a word in German that means like the mood of the time or the spirit of the times. And this is a really interesting story because they are husband and wife and they are both winemakers. So it's Mark and Jen Probrowski. Mark works with an Anomaly. He has a couple other small clients. And then Jennifer came on board Spotswood would be kind of one of her more well-known posts. And then after she left Spotswood, she went to Arrow & Branch and then Paul Meyer. So they have daytime jobs as winemakers, but they make wine together on Zeitgeist. And so they make a old vine Truchot Gris, a Chenin Blanc, and then a Cabernet Sauvignon. So again, a really cool portfolio in terms of you can kind of touch Cabernet, you can touch Petite Syrah, Malbec, Merlot, unusual whites. We actually don't have a Chardonnay in the portfolio here. We don't have a Sauvignon Blanc. So you're going to come here and touch things that are really small production that have amazing history and pedigree to them.
And you do have some whites then you're serving as well.
We do. We've got the Truchot Gris, which is a, this is from Russian River. The grape is actually Truchot Gris. It's considered one of the gray grapes. It would have been maybe referenced as gray Riesling.
Sure, yeah.
Back maybe in the 60s, kind of a field blendy kind of grape. It's got beautiful kind of lemon zest, gorgeous acidity, but not maybe as bracing as, let's say, a Sauvignon Blanc. It's still got some nice weight to it. Beautiful aromats. And then Zeitgeist also makes a Chenin Blanc. And Mark will never tell us where in St. Helena the vineyard is. He doesn't want anyone to know because there is not a lot of Chenin Blanc planted in California anymore.
No, no.
And so he doesn't want anyone trying to snap up that grape source.
I only know one other winemaker's done it.
I think there's something like a total of like 1,600 acres of Chenin in all of California.
Wow.
And I want to say in Napa, it's like less than 8. But
Lang and Reed.
Historically, yes. Historically, Chenin is a baby Chardonnay.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's a beautiful grape. And I think Mark and Jen coax so much finesse and balance out of that. And then we have a proprietary white blend that Eponymous makes, and that's a Pinot Blanc Riesling blend that's totally 100% dry.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, again,
interesting blend.
We just try to find things that we think are interesting, things that I want to drink in my own everyday life, and we want to share them, and we want to share that story. And, you know, for us, wine is definitely, let's tell you how we got here. And then let's share our enthusiasm and our point of view for it with you.
I could never work here. I'd be drinking them all day. That's the problem.
It's dangerous. End of the day, you're like, which one tasted best today?
Oh, I have a bottle I have to take off.
Yeah, but we generally try to curate the tasting. So we try to talk with you before and ask you what your interests are. And we generally keep it to 5 wines. After 5, I think it gets a little hard to focus.
Sure.
But the goal is that, you know, you're going to be introduced to these a part of our portfolio, these 8 brands, but we also want you to come back. And so you get to come back because there's always more wine to try here.
Well, and that's just it. And I don't know, in the future, would you take in another label if it came to it? I mean,
absolutely.
You're open to that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for us, we are 90 days in. So we are really a brand new concept here.
Right, right.
But we're not so new in terms of there's retailers here that do beautifully curated tasting experiences. We haven't reinvented the wheel here, but I think being owner co-op driven and minded, the approach is going to be a little bit different. And yes, we definitely have some winery partners kind of in the pipeline.
Okay.
And so, yeah, especially as we find the right brands that can kind of understand the ethos here and the spirit of here, then absolutely.
How long have you actually been? How many years in the wine business itself?
So, you know, it depends on what you technically qualify as my starting date. Back in the 80s, when my parents, we were living on property with the winery, our whole family was in the wine business. And after school during harvest, you'd go and help at harvest. If we did the bottling line when I was 10, I was at the bottling line because you lived on property and that's what you knew. So, I mean, I'm really grateful for the experience of growing up first in the ag part of it, you know, being in the vineyards, your kind of whole world, you get very grounded to those cycles of the vineyard. For instance, like now it's February. I can feel the smell of the mustard.
Oh, I'm sure.
Especially like when it's wet. So, and those are the kind of the cycles that you get used to, right? And you kind of orient your whole world around that. I professionally kind of came back and joined my parents after college. But you know, my summers, I was working in the tasting room, washing glasses. I mean, I think when you're a small family operation, you're just, it's what you know. I mean, it's what you do. It's what you're around all the time.
Well, you wear a lot of hats too.
You are the chief glass washer, toilet fixer,
yeah.
And everything a little bit in
all
between.
All the glamorous stuff.
Yeah, all the really glamorous stuff.
Well, what I'm getting at is, for the years you've been in the business, what is the one thing that you've learned as the most important thing above all else?
It's always about the wine. You can't lose focus on what you put in that bottle. You can't. Like, that has got to be ultimately. And I know we can kind of talk about wine in a lot of abstract ways.
Sure.
But for me, it's all about what are the steps that I'm doing to put the best thing I can in the bottle.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think it's really easy to get distracted,
mm-hmm.
and get caught up in, you know, this or that, or there's a lot of sideshows that go on in this business.
Sure.
So for me, you got to always make it about the wine, and maybe more so about the wine, about the place where it comes from.
Sure.
You know, and I think for us and for our family, you know, my dad was very involved in forming Stag's Leap District. We actually put it on our label, under the Stelzner Vineyards label, before we were ever recognized federally.
Oh, nice.
As an AVA.
Wow.
So he actually started putting that, I think, on our 1978 Cabernet. It said Stag's Leap District. He had to pull it off, I think, in 84, when we started petitioning the, at the time it was, I think, the TTB, the Tax Trade Bureau.
Sure.
And then we put it back on in 89 when we were approved as an AVA. There's a taste of there. And I think that that's really, put that and explain that to people and they can taste it and feel it. And yeah, that's what to me kind of is the most important.
During the time you've been in the business, I'm sure you've been doing plenty of interviews and press, that kind of thing along. But what is the one question that you don't get asked that you would like to be asked in terms of the business?
I think right now, today, there's a lot of speculation about Napa and if we've become too Disneyland or we've become too fancy, too maybe too hard to reach.
Yeah, I see that.
And I think that the framework of that conversation for me, I think that this is, we have such a short history here in Napa. We have not been making Cabernet that long. And for me, I find that we're just getting started. This is the most exciting time in Napa ever. And we're just getting started. And I think that when you become successful in such a short period of time, and clearly that is what Napa has been, very successful. And we're very grateful for that. But, you know, Cabernet's not been king here for very long. And I think we're really just understanding, even in a deeper sense, how to do that even better. And nowhere else in the world can make Cabernet like we do.
Oh, that's very true.
And I think that people underestimate how small Napa is. You know, we only make 4% of the entire production of wine out of California. We may be the best known, but it's tiny. We're like 1/5 the size of Bordeaux. So the volume here is small. The wines are intentional. And they have a lot of people who are really, really, really focused on how to keep improving that. And to be part of that culture, to be part of that community, it's a very small community, but to interact with people who, that's what they do every day. We get up in the morning thinking, what's the weather like this week?
Yeah, yeah.
What am I gonna have to go do in the vineyard? How can we track those things and then taste and discuss? I think for me, like, that's the thing I wish that people would focus on more. I think it's easy to focus on, this big company, or, you know, kind of the sideshows, like I like to say. But man, this is a really exciting time. We've got technology in ways that access to it we never had. The price of that technology has come way, way down. And the data we can get access to and help us make good decisions or just give us more information, we've never had that before. but we can still look back to history, right? And we can kind of combine all of that knowledge in one place. That to me is very exciting. Like, very exciting. So I wish people would talk about the positives more, because there are people here who are so deeply committed. You know, you talk about the vineyard management companies. I mean, winemaking. We've come so far in winemaking, and people are deeply committed to this. We should be celebrating that.
Well, the winemaking is expensive, and for these smaller wineries, there's so much passion in that because the profit margins are fairly thin. They're doing it because it's a lifestyle and what they love, right?
I think to a certain point, but it's become more of a business. There's no question that the wine business has become more of a business. You know, in 1980, we'd be excited if you showed up to try the wine. We'd give you a bottle for free, yeah, and we'd be excited. That part has shifted. So maybe the stakes are a little higher, but I also think it's because the results are that much better. And I do believe that food comes into this conversation.
Yeah, totally.
In a major way. And people value where things come from more today than they ever have. I think as we, some ways, feel more disconnected, connecting through food and wine becomes this almost primal instinct that you're kind of fueling. And so look, the food here, we started with people like Sally Schmidt and the original French Laundry, and that sowed seeds for kind of what we can do today. And there's nothing to mistake in Napa. We can grow food and grapes that cannot be replicated anywhere else in the world. And that is what makes this place so incredible. And we just feel really grateful to be here and be part of that and tell our part of that, but also share that with people, because there is nowhere else like this in the entire world. And that's really special. It deserves to be celebrated.
I agree. That's very true. Well, for our listeners who'd like to come by to Heron House, is this by appointment? Can they just wander in?
Yeah, so we have a couple different ways. You can for sure find us on Talk. We have a reservation system. You can call us. We'd love to talk to you on the phone and figure out how to curate your experience. You can call us at 707-947-7039. You can find us on our website, www.heronhouseyountville.com. We are very active on social media, so you can always find us on the Instagram. We like to call it the Gram, and Facebook. But yeah, definitely try to plan ahead, because then we can deliver for you a kind of a curated experience that fits your style preferences, your taste preferences, and your price point preferences. However, we do have a beautiful lounge area, so you're always welcome to walk in and grab a little splash and do a little shopping. We've got beautifully curated gifts here from a lot of really local artisans. So it's a great way to kind of understand the whole lifestyle here, because Napa isn't just food. It's not just wine. It attracts incredibly talented, creative people. And that's what the landscape and the culture here celebrates. And so we want to kind of be an extension of that.
That's great. Allison, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it too. Cheers.
Cheers. Learn more by visiting heronhouseyountville.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Copyright 2020.